It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wardrobe.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Was the hack. She burns at the stake tonight. Surely Rome understands that public executions discourage sin.
Have you finished last session's homework and checked out Stuart Gordon's The Pit and the Pendulum? With Lance Henriksen at his best. Imagine my surprise when I found Ministry sampled audio from the film in Psalm 69 back in 1992.
You swore you'd show mercy?
In this place, death is mercy.
So what do we have for you this time around? We mentioned last show that we went to Fan Expo in Toronto and met some interesting horror people. One man that showed us a lot of class was Joe Dante. This was the man that directed Gremlins when we were kids. He had us in stitches with The Burbs, starring Tom Hanks, and he gave us another reason to fear the open water with Piranha in 1978. But in the early 80s, he gave us one of several horror films that dealt with werewolves. And on this 27th Horror 101 podcast, we're going to spotlight that horror gem, which stars a ton of people, including Dee Wallace, Patrick McNee, Elizabeth Brooks, Kevin McCarthy, Robert Picardo, and an ancient John Carradine. Tonight, myself, the world-famous Brian Stewart, and cult sensation Nick McPherson are going to unleash
The Howling.
Hi, this is Joe Dante, and you're listening to Horror 101.
Joe Dante.
Did you meet him?
Yes.
Tell me all about it.
Oh, the screening of The Burbs. It was genius. Well, first of all, he actually showed up towards the tail end because they sent their car service to pick him up at the wrong place. And so he almost didn't make it to the Q&A. So he was there for the last couple of minutes, just before the movie ended. And they went to the Q&A. He's like, anyone have a question for Joe Dante? Bam, hand in the air, because I was the first person. There's a question I have always wanted to ask him, if I ever had the opportunity, and it was about The Burbs. That scene with Rick Dukeman and Tom Hanks' son, where they're in shot together and they're both eating and talking about grave digging, you know, that close shot?
Oh.
And I said, I've always wanted to know, was that in a reference to Hitchcock and his kind of obsession with food and murder?
Someone has an obsession with something, and it ends in cock.
And he was just like, you know, I really wish it was, but... He's obviously a Hitchcock fan. A lot of people compare the movie to Rear Window, The Burbs.
Hey, Ray, it's not Skip, it's me, Art. I'm just pretending to be Skip. Hey, you didn't have the scene ice pick around here, did you?
You know what? I think of The Burbs, and The Burbs had the same comedic entertainment value as anything John Hughes in that decade.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
It's so well done.
That's to hold it in high esteem. This is the guy that took on like Weird Science and Christmas Vacation and 16 Candles and The Breakfast Club.
Blues Brothers.
You know, well, that was John Landis. Now, has any of you seen The Howling?
Yep.
No.
You have seen The Howling?
Yeah.
You've never seen The Howling?
I insist that I've seen it here.
When I was growing up, the first Joe Dante film that we ever got exposed to as kids was Gremlins. And I remember being in grade one, because this is how far back it goes. And there was two groups of kids. There were the kids that could, you know, that watched it and they couldn't stop talking about how gross it was and all the really, like, terrific gore effects, like what the gremlin gets thrown in the blender, another one gets thrown into a microwave. And that was our first exposure to, horror effect gore, like practical effect gore. And for kids who weren't in the know, all we had were the retellings from all of our classmates whose parents would let them see the movie. Like, oh, you've got to see it, man. It throws this guy into a blender, and it's just so disgusting. The guts go flying everywhere. And we can only begin to imagine what this must look like.
Gremlins was the first time, when I was a kid, I ran into a movie that hit VHS, and I couldn't find it for weeks. You know what I mean? This was the first time where it was always reserved and always rented out. Every time we went to go see it, they had 30 copies of it, and every single one of them was fucking out. You know, and you'd even have those VHS stores where it was bad enough where it would say, okay, Gremlins is supposed to be here and the shelf is empty. But you would have, like, all these boxes of the Gremlins, and underneath each box you would have a little hook where a tag would be if the movie was there. Right. And if the movie was rented out, the tag would be turned around and it would say rented out and it would be red. So you'd go, you'd want to watch this Gremlins movie and you'd see all these copies, but under each fucking box was this red, no, it's not fucking here. This went on for fucking weeks when I was a kid, up until we finally found it one Friday night. And that Friday night, there was a whole bunch of us huddled around the VHS watching this movie with Mrs. fucking Dietz or whatever the fuck her name is from.
Deagle,
that was her name, flying up the stairs on her frickin' contraption and out the door. And it was the old man who was the gun dealer in Terminator. Fucking foreign cars this, fucking foreign cars that.
Yeah.
And it was Zach Galligan. And the, oh, so juicy.
And it was a long time before the sequel came out. Because I remember I was old enough to see the sequel in movie, like in the theater, without a parent. And so it must have been a good decade before Gremlins 2 ever came out.
Gremlins is the perfect, you know, even, like, you like to say that arachnophobia was the first thrillomedy. If you think about
it... Well, that was the first one to call itself a thrillomedy. They used that term on the poster.
Would you agree that Gremlins would probably fall under that category as well?
I think so, too.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that was the first film ever to be dubbed a thrillomedy. They coined the term.
But even before Gremlins, he made this... Say it with me. Lycanthropy?
No, it's lycanthropy.
Lycanthropy. Like, yeah. He made this lycanthropy movie in 1981-82 called The Howling. And the early 80s, for some reason, the early 80s really latched on to werewolves and lycanthropy. There was a bunch of great titles that came out. Yep, Fright Night, American Werewolf in London. The Howling. There was another movie in 1982. I think it had Gregory Hines in it, and another guy that I couldn't even tell you the actor's name, but he reminds me a lot of Mr. Baker from Doctor Who. It was called Wolfen. Have you ever heard of Wolfen?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And don't forget Silver Bullet, too.
Silver Bullet, I remember.
Which was Stephen King.
Yeah, Stephen King. And that was when the priest was the werewolf that threw us all.
And the kid was in this motorized wheelchair.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, before CGI was possible, a werewolf movie needed spectacular horror effects to pull off a transformation that's not just going to make the audience buy it, but also scare the hell out of them.
The transformation of Eddie in The Howling, if I remember correctly, because to be honest, as I sit here now, I remember that Dee Wallace is in it.
Yeah.
There's a few characters in it, like a really good cast. But there is a transformation in The Howling that scares the fuck out of me when I watch it. When Eddie is sitting there, and it's one of those scenes where she's watching this guy transform.
Mm-hmm.
And for like 60 seconds, you're thinking to yourself, why isn't this woman fucking running? Because anybody else would, but for some reason she's not. And you don't care. You know what I mean? You're just watching this awesome, horrid transformation.
Well, you're just as transfixed as we are. Or, you know, we're just as transfixed as she is. And you also get that sense that if she leaves the room, we're not going to see the rest of it.
Well, I mean, the other great transformation in reverse would have been the death of Evil Ed in Fright Night.
Mm-hmm.
When Ronald McDowell can't take his eyes off him. And you get that wonderful range of emotion that he's feeling like this poor young person, you know, who's taken in.
He's reaching out for the hand.
He doesn't know what to do. I don't think he meant to kill him and have such a bloody demise. I think he actually felt sorry for him.
And then there's that, he's reaching out for the hand as he's dying, and then he has that moment of clarity. He's like, what the fuck am I doing? This thing's a monster.
Yeah.
And he pulls away and watches him die.
Time to roll the film. With drinks firmly in hand and a Blu-ray spinning, we open The Howling with Dee Wallace playing Karen White, a famous news anchor who, for some reason, has come into contact with a serial killer named Eddie. She agrees to meet him in a nasty porn joint, allowing herself to be bait for the police who are tracking her every move. That is, until they lose her.
She didn't feel a thing, Karen. None of them do. They're not real, the people here. They're dead. They could never be like me. I'm gonna light up your whole body, Karen.
Turn around now, Karen. I want to give you something.
She's already agreed to stake out and meet this guy, and that's the beginning of the film. It's like, why is she doing this? But, oh, okay, good for her. Then she goes into that that adult film joint, sits down, and he's there, puts a quarter in, and it's not a porn that's on the screen. It's almost like a fucking
snuff. It's like rape porn, yeah.
Snuff film. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, was this something that they shot? That would have been a question. I wish I would have watched this movie before meeting Joe Dante, because I would have loved to have asked him, did you shoot that, or is that from a movie? Because that looked pretty vile.
Yeah, and then with the nylon stockings over the face of the rapist made them look inhuman.
And I'm like, it looks like a movie that you would never see, because it just looks that vile. It looks like something that, back in 1981, you wouldn't see anything like that. I think mainstream audiences would watch that kind of footage and say, what the fuck are they watching in that booth?
Yeah. Well, terrifying. The thing is, don't forget, back then, because porn, for the most part, was so taboo and relatively inaccessible, there was a lot of creepy... Like, don't forget what Times Square used to be like before Giuliani got to it.
Well, this would have been a time before VHS became hugely popular. People were still watching porn in theaters.
Yeah.
You know, just or in shady Paul back Rubens. Rooms. Yeah.
Just ask Paul Rubens.
Here's our girl.
Fred.
Hi. Well, we're going to make ratings history tonight. You're going to be the cynosure of all eyes.
What is that?
That means that everybody is going to be watching you. Everybody wants to see the lady who caught Eddie the Mangler.
Terrific.
You have my copy?
Yes.
Good luck.
Boy, she seems shaky.
Look fine to me.
Kevin McCarthy,
died in 2010.
Yeah, he died just recently.
I loved him in UHF. He was funnier in UHF than I would say Leslie Nielsen was in any of the Naked Gun movies. And I love Leslie Nielsen, but the fact of the this fact, his roots come from horror. And he has one of the most classic horror lines in all of history, because he was in the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers from the 50s. He's the guy at the end of the movie going, "They're here already! You're next! That's him!
Yeah.
Stop! Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Make them listen to me before it's too late! Everyone! They're here already! You're next!"
He was so good in UHF. He was so funny.
He had to go over the top to be a villain in a comedy, but he goes over the top to the perfect mark.
Trespassing, eh?
But he was, again, he was in Inner Space. He'd been in a couple Joe Dante movies as well.
Karen goes to make a statement on the news and freezes right up. Cameras rolling. She's still traumatized by her encounter with Eddie.
Okay, tell me, Doctor. How crazy am I?
Completely banana.
I think so.
I'm going to recommend that you go up to the colony for a week or two.
Your place up north there?
That's right. Now, I only recommend it to very special patients, ones who I think will benefit from its environment.
Karen's doctor sends her and her husband off to his retreat up in the wilderness so she can clear her head and recover from her recent encounter with Eddie. And Brian Stewart was surprised to see that the doctor was played by Patrick McNee.
Fans will remember him, of course, most prominently as John Steed for the Avengers. He has a ton of television and movie appearances, though.
Hmm. Oh, especially in the 80s.
Yeah, he was huge.
And now that I watch this movie, he was in Waxwork with David Warner. Remember, I tried to watch, you were very tired one night.
Yeah,
you fell asleep during it. We should do that again.
But he
was the guy that knew who David Warner's character was. He's like, this guy here is immortal, and he collected relics of 18 of the most vicious, evil people in all of history to start this apocalypse. And I remember him talking to Zach Galligan, because Zach Galligan, who was also in Gremlins, was in Waxwork with David Warner.
Yeah, Patrick McNee's been around.
Who directed Waxwork?
Anthony Hickox.
Oh, okay.
I wonder how things are doing at that retreat.
The cows around here? Charlie Barton's got a couple of acres of pasture just down the hill.
They don't sound right.
I'm not really sure how cows are supposed to sound.
Not like that.
Yeah, something is very wrong up there.
Let me go, let me go. I want to end it.
Easy, buddy, just calm down.
It's the only way. I gotta end it. I gotta burn.
Oh, now calm down. Think a minute.
You gotta let me do it, Doc. You gotta.
And John Carradine, say what you want about John Carradine, but he's been gone for so long now that watching him in a film, it's like, oh, there's John Carradine. Yeah. You know, the guy has 200 titles under his name. He's been in everything.
And you always joke that I was like born at the age of 50, and I like am old for my age. John Carradine was always 300. I don't think I've ever seen him as a young man.
No, I think you're right about that. I would like to see something that he was in when he was
Grapes
when
of Wrath young. Will probably be the youngest I've ever seen him. But apart from that, though, he's always looked incredibly old. So, yeah.
in the 80s, he was the guy that they would throw in just for nostalgia.
Yeah.
We got John Carradine, just throw him in. He was in Ice Pirates.
Yeah.
For he had a bit part in the Ice Pirates. He was the emperor. He was like, oh, I can still feel in this old body. He looked like he was 110.
Yeah.
Well, as he was getting older, he was becoming kind of like Bela Lugosi. A lot of low-budget filmmakers who respected
him
just paid him a few bucks to be in movies, and I think it kept him alive a few years longer. But in movies like this, he must have been thrilled to be in, you know.
Yeah, because he actually gets his own pair of teeth in this movie.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Everyone's a fucking werewolf at this community, and Karen's husband Bill gets brought into the fold, seduced by a voluptuous Elizabeth Brooks, who thankfully for us guys, bears more than just her fangs.
Who was the primal wolf chick there with the black hair?
I don't know.
Consult the oracle!
That was a highlight for me when she disrobed.
She had that.
That's the
at least he trimmed the verge, eh?
Yeah.
She had the perky jets and she had a little bit of abs going, and she showed her bush, and
she survives.
Yeah.
Well,
Elizabeth Brooks.
Quite a few of them probably survived.
No. Her name is Elizabeth Brooks.
Elizabeth Brooks.
Elizabeth Brooks was born in Toronto.
Oh, she's Canadian. We had Canadian poontang in here.
Oh, shit, she died in 1997. At the age of 46.
Drug overdose?
No longer with us.
Cancer.
Oh!
Unfortunate.
Good looking girl.
Very severe features.
And it works with the whole primal aspect of her character. You know, like, when she looked at you, it was like she was sizing you up.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Didn't care for her acting at the beginning. But it made more sense as the movie went on because it felt stilted, her delivery of her lines. Like she didn't really know what she was supposed to say next. Like she was struggling to think of what she was going to say.
But then she took all her clothes off and you're like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as
a picture's worth a thousand words.
As a heterosexual male viewer, you're tantalized by her
boobies.
Oh, poor Dee Wallace. Completely betrayed and left alone. She doesn't know the extent of her danger until she comes face to face with her old friend, Eddie.
Hello, Karen.
Eddie.
I'm glad you came. I wanted to see you again.
I saw you die.
You said on the phone that you wanted to get to know me. But here I am, Karen. Look at me.
I remember being a kid, and I didn't know who the actor was at the time, but watching Eddie transfer in that clinic there with the soft lighting and the shadows scared the fuck out of me. The eyes rolling in the back of the hand.
Yeah.
And the whole bladder effect when I was a kid, that was like state of the art. That was like When I saw that back when I was a kid, it was like watching the T-1000 more for the first time in 1991. It was like I'd never seen it before, and it was terrifying. The red eyes and the snout going forward, and the whole Hulk thing with the clothes bursting from the distortion of the body.
A lot of pneumatics, and inflatable, like I said, like almost these little tiny balloons that would float under the surface of the skin.
And I had forgotten. I remembered that she hit him with acid, but I had forgotten that he came back as a humanoid again, and when he looked absolutely fucking horrible.
Yeah, you can see the bone. The bone
from the flesh acid ate right down to the
and
bone.
And pieces of the flesh where it had melted and were still clinging on, which I thought was a nice touch.
Oh, yeah, they did a good job with a lot of the practical effects. It seems like as soon as they moved away from the practical effects, that's where it fell apart.
Yeah.
It blew my mind when I found out that Robert Picardo, who plays Eddie in The Howling, was also the Doctor in Star Trek Voyager.
He was the with the crown hair.
With the chrome dome, yeah.
That's Eddie?
Yeah. Well, they had him in a bad wig in this movie. Actually, in almost every single one of Joe Dante's movies, they have him in a wig.
That's right, because the garbage man has a full head of hair, too.
But and even in when he's in Explorers, he actually, it's like an almost uncredited role. When they're watching the old cheesy sci-fi movie,
okay,
he's the guy with like the big...
I'm trying to think, was he in Matinee too?
Picardo was in Matinee too. He was Howard, the theater manager.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think, honestly, the only movie I don't remember Robert Picardo being in was Gremlins.
Yeah.
I think he was in the second one, but I don't think he was in the first one.
Dee Wallace survives the werewolf den and makes it back to the city to report her story. It'll be her final broadcast.
Good evening. From the day we're born, there is a battle we must fight. A struggle between what is kind and peaceful in our natures and what is cruel and violent. But now for some of us, that choice has been taken away. A secret society exists and is living among all of us. They are neither people nor animals, but something in between. I know what you're thinking because I've been where you are, but I have proof and... Tonight I'm going to show you something. Make you believe.
Boom. The Howling. You howl for The Howling. With Dee Wallace turning into a Wookiee. Brian Stewart.
Fun movie. Special effects. Really, I love the practical effects in this. The transformations take a little bit longer than I would have liked. I think they could have sped it up a bit. Like you say, Dee Wallace stands there watching a transformation sequence for about 2.5 minutes.
Now remember, like, this was 1981. This was back before the bladder effect was killed. This was back when it was like, look what we can do with the bladder effect. Look at the bladder effect.
You've got like 20 bladders in this guy.
Love the bladder effect.
I have silver bullets in here.
Silver bullets, my ass.
But actually, one of my favorite shots had nothing to do with practical effect. Well, actually, it is a practical effect, but nothing to do with makeup. Was just when the hero from the station shows up with the silver bullets and he's going through the files. And just the shadow of the werewolf passing through the window reflected on the wall, just that brief second. I thought that was as effective as anything. Well, that's old school 1920s silent filmmaking.
Right there. Well, there's some fantastic throwbacks and, you know, things that they threw in that really drew in. Honestly, this movie only had a couple little missteps, and for the time and the medium that they were making this movie for, it wouldn't have been as pronounced.
Yeah.
But now in our day, when we get to watch it in high def, it's really going to just be glaringly better. Well, it's just like when Cleve Hall was saying, you know, practical effects always translate better than whatever the special effect trick of the time was.
Yeah. I mean, actually, the more I think about it, the more this movie reminds me of Rosemary's Baby.
Really?
You've got the new couple, you've got the fragile kind of waif of a girlfriend who's troubled and disturbed, having nightmares. The husband's the first to get entrapped by this secret cult, and he gets lured in first and joins them. And then she finally discovers at the end of the movie what's been happening all along, that this doctor she's trusted all this time is actually part of this kind of inner circle.
That's
all right, I'll give that to you.
Yeah, that's profound. Yeah. I can't disagree with anything of that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
See, this is why I have you around.
It's very, very similar in that
way. But Rosemary's Baby didn't have werewolf sex.
No, it didn't.
It had devil sex.
It had devil sex and rape. And
you're absolutely right. But Rosemary's Baby, though, like, you could tell, like, the sheet's over and she's kind of like, you can still tell she's being fucked just by her rocking motion, and she sees the Pope coming for her, and the Pope right. starts talking to her. I'm like, this is all wrong. This is not good at all. And then it cut to something else.
But a bit worse than the Pope was like, hey, baby, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Kiss the ring. You're being fucked by the devil.
I've seen Dee Wallace in a lot of movies. E.T., Cujo, Critters, Popcorn, tons of them. Sitting down to watch The Howling again after so many years, I gotta tell you, she was a real dish back in the 80s.
The last time I watched this movie, I was probably about 19 or 20. Now that I'm pushing 40 and I watch this, I watched the movie and was I the only one thinking, goddamn, Dee Wallace was very fuckable? With all due respect, very fuckable in this movie. I found her very attractive.
Oh, the part where she's in, like, little short shorts playing tennis?
It's yeah! Like, and, you know, she's got the big blue eyes and the soft lips, and I'm looking at her going, yes!
80s hair bothers me, though.
Yes!
I feel like I could get skated during the act in
really?
That hair.
You're gonna get stuck up on the hairstyles?
It's just, I don't like that big 80s hair.
And we have met Dee Wallace, and I got a picture of her. She was a really nice lady. If she ever hears this show, she's not going to like us anymore.
I hugged this motherfucker?
Yeah. Sorry, Dee. We still love you. With all due respect.
Some of us have some really,
really
unhealthy ways.
This movie.
Seriously, between you and Dee Wallace and me and PJ Souls, like, what the fuck?
Get me out of here, Bill.
Let's score The Howling. I think I got enough for a show. Let's score The Howling. Nick, you go first.
Honestly, because I've seen this one a few times, I could have swore I watched this one here, but if you say I haven't seen it in that long, I guess I might have just got it for the wife to watch. But I've always really enjoyed this one. And to be honest, even the last time I watched it, I didn't notice that the effects were so choppy in points. I guess I was just kind of going with the nostalgia. Again, this is a Channel 20 for me, big time. I'm going to give this one a solid... Eight. Yeah.
Your classic werewolf can change shape anytime it wants, day or night, whenever it takes a notion to it. That's why I call them shapeshifters. I got a dozen books on it.
Brian Stewart.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I'm probably going to go eight and a half.
Really?
Yeah.
You just have to go half above me.
It depends. I mean, it's in that ballpark at any rate. Eight and a quarter. How's that? How do you like that?
Eight and a quarter.
Okay. It's a little more than an eight. I think eight is bare minimum, but I think there's more to it than that. The few things that I don't like are nowhere near as offsetting as the things I really like about the movie. Great practical effects, and some wonderful acting.
But some wooden acting as well. That's why I notched a couple points.
But it was, again, and there aren't that many werewolf movies, really. Mm-hmm. I don't think there are that many, at least not that many good ones. But it had that kind of tongue-in-cheek horror adventure feel to it, and I miss that. You know, like, you'd never see this kind of, this tone. I think this tone of horror film, I think is pretty rare. I don't think you really see them anymore, and maybe because of that fact, I tend to treasure a little more. So, yeah, maybe about eight and a half.
They come back from the dead if you don't kill them right. Plus, they regenerate. You know what that is? Cut off an arm, cut off a leg, stick a knife in a heart, nothing. They may look dead, but bam, 3 days later, they're as good as new.
You believe in this?
What am I, an idiot?
I'll give it I'll give it a 7.5. I mean, I enjoyed it, and to be honest, when I sat down, I've watched movies that I felt were more powerful or better than this one with you guys that mm-hmm. you've walked away not really enjoying. So I'm glad that you guys enjoyed this one. I found it more frightening than I remember it to be, especially with the scenes with Eddie. I remember Eddie really, really bothering me when I was a kid, but then when he comes back and he's humanoid again and he's got the acid, it was just frightening. Joe Dante, you know, I'm glad I got a chance to say thank you for this movie and then watch it again and make this show for him. I liked the references that he gave to the original Wolfman, 1941, and he even went so far not just to show the clips of the movie as they're watching
a picture
it
of Lon Chaney Jr. I didn't even notice that before.
For no reason at all. There's a still picture of Lon Chaney Jr.
There's a cameo of Roger Corman, who walks into a phone booth.
Exactly. Yep. And again, that is another homage to Rosemary's Baby. I would love to have a dialogue with... with Joe Dante and say, listen, we watched the movie and we found this, 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 and this lined up perfectly with the theme of Rosemary's Baby. That can't be a coincidence. I would guarantee you that he would have a lot of great things to say about that
film.
I
wish you could have been at that Q&A. That was the Thursday night. You didn't get there until the next night.
So I'm glad that you guys enjoyed this film as much as you did. I really am.
Yes, that's the sign of the werewolf.
That's just a legend, though, isn't it?
How does it go? Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolf bane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
And that, my friends, is the end of our Howling show. We want to thank Joe Dante for making this and many other great films that have entertained us over the years. Check out The Howling, starring Dee Wallace, Kevin McCarthy, Patrick McNee, Elizabeth Brooks, Dennis Dugan, Belinda Velasquez, the awesome Robert Picardo, and an ancient John Carradine. And Joe Dante himself is a fantastic guy. He was a class act when we met him in Toronto. He was great to talk to, very personable and friendly. He took pictures with us and gave us a shout out. And in return, we want to help him promote a project that he's involved with, a website that's real fun to browse called trailersfromhell.com. Trailers from Hell is a collection of hundreds of different movie trailers from all times and genres that have commentary on them from contemporary filmmakers. We spent hours going through a bunch of them. It's a great website. You can also find Trailers from Hell on YouTube, BlinkX channels, and it's available on cable television both in the US, on home video and video on demand, and mobile devices. Be sure to subscribe to their newsletter. If you're a fan of this show, I guarantee you hours of fun at Trailers from Hell. And Halloween is upon us once again, our favorite time of year. Next show will be another tribute to the holiday, and I can't wait to get working on it. We hope you enjoyed listening. Thanks again for joining us. And for the world-famous Brian Stewart and the cult sensation Nick McPherson, this is Cash Wampum saying there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to help you find it right here on Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.